This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. So I'm still not in my car. I've actually got my mother-in-law's car. It's an old preacher car, so that'll be fine. Although the dashboard on this is sloped differently, so I'm really hoping this recorder does not go flying off this dashboard at some point, but I'll try to be careful not to do that. It is Thursday night. It is after our small groups. I'm not going to be able to see my notes until I get home, but that's okay. It's only 15 minutes home, and so there's things I can gab about. My car is still in the shop. I haven't heard anything, but I haven't called. So this Friday will be, I think, close to 2 weeks since I bugged the poor guy. So I'm going to call him this Friday and say, am I in the door yet? So we'll see. You know, I mean, that he's going to be cheaper than anywhere else to get this done. I don't think it'll come with a guarantee per se, but he has been in business forever. So one presumes he does good work, and my mechanics say he does good work. So, you know, so I think I mentioned the week before last that I'd called around and I found one place that would do it and would do it in about a week. For $4,800, they would give me a warranty for 100,000 miles. I was like, whoa, no, I don't think so. Did I mention this was a 1998 Lincoln Continental? So we'll see what the final bill comes in. He said $2,500, $2,800, somewhere in there. So it's worth the wait. So I worked at home again this week. But my beloved has some physical therapy tomorrow in the morning, and so she's going to need her car. So I called up my mother-in-law, Nana, and I said, Nana, you doing anything Friday and Saturday? And she said she wasn't, so she was very happy for me to borrow her car. Nana is very kind about that. So we're gonna have her car for the next 2 days, so I'll have a vehicle. Then probably work from home next week. So, depending on what the guy says tomorrow. So we'll just see what he says. I'll call him up. We'll see what he says. Anyways, so God is good and he is kind and he is gracious. And one thing that's amazing is that I think I have the Hemp Day costume finished up. There's cars in the suicide lane here. Maybe one car trying to help another car. Hopefully there's no accidents. So we'll see if I can actually get it on Saturday morning. I have almost everything done. I have just a little tweak to do, but I need to get my beloved's opinion before I do that tweak on what would be the best way to approach it. Got a couple of different options and I'm kind of torn. I was theoretically going to just make a macrame kind of a loincloth thing just to give people's eyes someplace to go instead of where they would go if I wasn't wearing the loincloth. And I had found a pattern, and I watched a person make it, and there were some miscalculations along the way, and I really should have made each of the individual ropes longer, so it ended up being much shorter than I thought it was going to be, and uneven, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to just come up with a plan. There's a couple of different plans. We're just going to have to come up with what we want. So we'll get that figured out. It'll be fine. As soon as I get this costume squared away and get kind of things settled in a little bit. Then of course I have National Nude Day to work on, and potentially I have a surprise to work on. I am going to do National Cheerleading Week this year because it's on, you know, that first week in March is National Cheerleading Week. So I thought that would be fun. I have a little bit of stuff to do for that. I lost my back plate. I left my back plate in the store. Silly boy. That has the magnets on it, so I have to rebuild that as soon as I get National Hemp Day out of the way, because the very next week is Valentine's Day, which is Steampunk Cupid Day for me. So I've got, and I need the back plate for the wings. So I gotta get that done. That's not too complicated. It's basically a piece of plastic with some straps on it and then some magnets strategically turned the correct way so everything snaps in place when needed. So that's not too bad. And I'll get that squared away this coming week. But I have the piece of plastic. I've got the magnets. I think we're fine. I say I have the magnets, but I should really check. I think I do. I had a whole stack of magnets, and things fell off. And when they fell off, a bunch of the magnets cracked. Sad day. It was a sad day. I am going to tape those magnets on, so even if I have the pieces, I can put them together and tape them on. They'd still work. But it was a sad day. But I'll get that figured out. And then, like I said, there might be a surprise secret costume that I'm working on. But certainly, I will have the National Nude Day costume to work on. Got the supplies in for that. I just need to start building it. So, yeah. Costumes, I think, are okay. We're puttering along. We're good. Should be fine. Writing is fine. I'm a few words behind. About 300-ish words behind, and I thought I was actually closer than I am, but I added Saturday from last week into my totals, and that was minus 41 words, so I'm not just 250-ish words, I'm actually 300-some. But that's okay. That's okay. We'll get it. I'm in the exciting part of the book now, so it's a matter of just writing it out. Still don't think I have the epilogue. I've got the ending, I think, but I don't have the epilogue. I don't think. But we'll find something to do for the epilogue. It's always worked out. It will work out again. So we'll see. Anyway, so that will be book 18. So theoretically, I have 4 more weeks now. I am on target. So I'm on chapter 22-ish. And there are normally about 32 chapters in the book. So since I'm on 22, it's 31, 32, somewhere in there. And one of them's real easy and fast. So theoretically, I should be 3/4 of the book, way through the book. And I am over page 300, and normally we come in somewhere around 450, so I'm on target. And even if the book comes in a little shy, that's okay too. There's no hard, fast rule that says it has to be 150,000 words. And in fact, the first book, instead of being 450 pages, I think was 400-ish. So it'll be fine. I do need to start conceptualizing of what I'm going to do for a cover. Because I got to start thinking about costumes for the grandkids. Hopefully we're over the hump with the grandkids. Because Asher was pulling back. And then this last time, you know, he was pulling back. But then I found the theme. Because I pay them $25 a piece to do a cover. And so I had was taking shots of Clara, and I think I mentioned this story that she said, well, I'll do it. And I, before Lizzie and I were talking, I was like, what are you going to do with your $25? And Lizzie said, well, she's probably going to buy pistachios. Because apparently she really loves pistachios. And so when Clara said, well, I'll do it, chirped up, you know, Asher said, well, I can do it. You know, I said, are you saving your sister from pistachios? And he said, yeah. I don't think he liked the thought of her having $50 worth of pistachios. So we'll just have to see. I'm not quite sure what I'm doing yet. Actually, I don't have any idea what I'm doing for that cover, but that's okay. In terms of kindness, in terms of the kindness of God, we certainly had kindness this week. We had closed up the year last week, got that done, and then we had some extra things that we needed to do for start of year, so we got some of those deployed, and then one of the big things we needed to do was to make the modifications so that the missionaries would get a 2.5% increase in their base allowance. Once you do that, there are a lot of other calculations that flow out from that, so by the time it's all said and done, that base allowance increase, which seems like it should just be turning a knob, actually ends up being six different sessions of stuff, and actually ended up being more than that. I think we ended up at eight because of, maybe seven, because of the way the rules had gotten changed enough, we need to split it. We split up some of the processes. So we've just been kind of working through those. The guy who is actually in charge of doing that, he had something come up where he was going to be out for a couple of days this week, and so I had been working with him on all of that, and I didn't want us to wait until next week when we would have been under the gun trying to get everything finished before we closed January. So I said, look, I'll take the remaining steps. So I was working on those this week. Yesterday, we got two of those done. Was it yesterday? Yeah. I think we put together some information on Tuesday that then had to be worked through. And so all that information got worked through on Wednesday. And then we had uploaded the information we thought correctly into all the data structures, and then last night the posting routines failed. and they failed because of what we had uploaded. You know, we have had other failures in the past, and so I was just kind of hoping that it was one of those other ancillary failures, but no, it was the data that we had uploaded. So that put us on a hunt, and it was really interesting because I got the email like 8:15 about how that the post had failed. And so I texted back and emailed back and said, okay, let me talk to Mel, let's see what we got. And Mel is one of the database administrators, so Mel started working on it, I started working on it, Mel sent a bunch of information, and then I told Mel, I said, can we hop onto a Teams call, because I've been doing some investigating too. So we hop on, we start looking. This stuff, that failure point is way, way down in the guts of the machine. I mean, it's way deep in routines that have run and run and run and run. And we're looking at it, and they're complicated routines, and they're long, and we're looking at it, and we're trying to decipher when we're in wrong. We've got the error message, but we're trying to locate where it happened, why it happened, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And in the back of my head, I'm just hearing this, well, you know, you're just going to need to call Rusty. You're just going to need to call Rusty. Rusty retired last year. And then he can at least point you the right way, and maybe he can help you. He can just help you, because you're really going to need to call Rusty, you know. And so I just kind of kept pushing that off to the side and saying, well, let's check this, well, let's check that, well, let's check the other. And it was just stunning because we're looking at the data and we're looking at some stuff, and suddenly I have this little voice, or I notice something happened that it came into my awareness. Let's put it that way. But it was like a little voice, a whisper that said, well, you know, those two account numbers are different. The two account numbers that were the focus of our attention, the two records, I should say, that were the focus of our attention should have been the same account number, but they were different. And as soon as I saw they were different, it was like, oh, this problem is a completely different problem. And so then it was almost instantaneous. When I saw that those things, it was just like click, 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 bam, there it is. Ah, okay. And so then, you know, just from that, I was able to say, oh, okay, okay, okay. So I was able to kind of get us on the right track and figure it out. And at the end of the day, what it came down to is on one specific record, we had to go to one create time and add 5 seconds to it. And as soon as we added that 5 seconds to it, now I don't have, just a second, I gotta get the garage door opener. I do have a magic button that allows me to open the garage door, but I think when we had a cold snap a couple of weeks back, I'm pretty sure it killed the batteries in the sensors. So I just gotta see, no. Yay, batteries are back. Look at that. Apparently the batteries warmed up and they were okay, because I am opening the garage door even as we speak from my phone. So that's a pretty cool thing. Anyways, so once we had that, then, you know, it was no time at all that we were able to isolate the problem, theoretically fix the problem. And then once we theoretically fixed the problem, we called the head of financial services, and she had a button that she could push. She pushed her button. Everything went fine. Ding, 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 ding. So theoretically, we are ready. We are ready for... And I'm sure you can hear that. That's when I close it from my phone. There's a light that flashes inside for 10 seconds or so to say, hey, I'm closing the garage door. Okay, so there's that. So all is well. God is kind. He's been gentle and has been gracious and helped us. At this point, it looks like we have everything in place for start of year, end of January. It looks like that's all good. And we seem to be doing okay. So today, I thought it would be great. Let me just see if this is still recording. It should be. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to bang it there. Yes, it's still recording. Okay. Today, just every once in a while, I think it's really important to remind ourselves. You know, there are many people who like to point fingers and name names and claim that we're unfair and we're unkind because we have things they don't have, and that's obviously the result of our privilege, and they're underprivileged and they've been oppressed, and you know, their lives have been so horrible. And one of the responses that I have to that, if someone is really serious about that, is to say, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but honestly, it's a hard sell for me because I grew up in the Philippines. And you can talk about how that the average earnings for a white family in America is $70,000-$75,000. And for an average African-American family, it's only 45-ish. And how oppressive America must be. But I noticed that all this concern about equity stops at the border, because in the Philippines, they made an average of $5,500. So no one seems to be wanting to take half of the wealth of the United States and ship it overseas. We just want to redistribute inside our borders. So I came across this article and I thought, yeah, this is pretty much the reflection that you get when you grow up overseas, because even us going overseas as missionary, that probably our earnings would have qualified us as lower middle class. We were wealthy, almost wealthy beyond imagination for the Filipinos, because of the house we lived in and the appliances we had and the food that we had and our servant and et cetera, et cetera. So the name of this YouTube video was Living in a 15 square foot. Living in 15 square feet, that's what it's called. Inside Hong Kong's coffin homes. So it talks about, starts off talking about a man named Milton Chan. And it says, in this older walk-up building, Milton Chan has finally grown used to his new unit. It's not much, but it will have to do. He lives in a subdivided flat that's been carved up into 18 wooden cubicles. They look like coffins, with each being no larger than a ping pong table. What would it be like to live in one of these tiny spaces? Milton is one of 220,000 Hong Kongers living in cramped and claustrophobic subdivided flats. Milton can only afford the smallest of places in Hong Kong living spaces. Living spaces are measured in square feet, and Milton's unit is 15 square feet, which is only 1.4 square meters, barely enough to lie down with a bed, and little else. That space costs Milton 1,300 Hong Kong dollars. And if I remember, that's about 220 US dollars, something like that. Cost him that per month. So I think that's about, just a second, we'll find out, because Google is here. How much in US dollars is 1,300 Hong Kong dollars? 167. $167 for basically a ping pong table. That's what you're paying per month. And there are 18 other wooden cubicles in there that have been divided up. He at least has a wooden door that slides, and his walls are wooden, plywood. There is two bathrooms that are communally shared between the 18 wooden cubicles. Thankfully, there is one person who is paid by the landlord to keep the bathrooms and the kitchen clean. And then there's a small kitchen that they all share as well. That's what he lives in. There is a single air conditioner that serves all 18 of the flats. So, and one of the problems that Milton has is there's no soundproofing on any of these things. And so he has a woman who lives above him who plays loud music videos at night. So he does have enough space to store things under his bed, because he has the bottom bunk, which is good. And everything else he has, he hangs on hooks around his walls. That's how he lives. In the place where he had come from, it was more expensive. They kept raising the prices, but his walls were only chicken wire. So he had zero privacy there, and he didn't have any storage space underneath. And yet, people were living in that type of thing. In that one, you have other flats. One of the things in this video was talking about how Hong Kong's poor have to live in flats that have been subdivided into smaller units. They're usually around 121 square feet, so that's more, obviously, and include a private toilet and a kitchen, but these flats often house an entire family. Vanessa and Bill live in this subdivided flat with their son and infant daughter, sharing two bunk beds among the four of them. The unit provides only 40 square feet per person. The man is the sole breadwinner in the family, and he only earns 10,000 Hong Kong dollars a month as a supermarket, works as a supermarket. Rent and utilities take up more than half of their income at close to 6,000 Hong Kong dollars a month. Mom stays home. She cooks, but she tries to just steam things because if she does anything with oil, the odor is everywhere. So they were saying that this particular family, the best option for them would be to find the affordable housing that the Hong Kong government is putting together, because those only cost $2,500 a month for nearly double the size of their current unit. But they have no idea when they'll get an offer. The average waiting time for public housing is 5.6 years, with close to one of 16 waiting applicants, only one of 16 receiving an offer between the summers of 2019 and 2020. The Hong Kong government has said that increasing the housing supply is a priority, and the target is to end subsidized housing by 2049. That's more than two decades away. So for those still waiting, Hong Kong offers a roof and a bed, but little else. So the next time you find yourself discontent in life, discontented with the way things are in the United States of America, certain that you are being oppressed and that life is just terrible, just remember there are people in this world who consider themselves blessed to get out of a 14 or 15 square foot quote unquote apartment that has walls of chicken wire and into an apartment that has plywood and maybe is a little cheaper but still costs you $167 a month, has a little bit of storage underneath it and some hooks for you to hang your stuff on, and you only have to share the two bathrooms and the kitchen with 18 other people. I mean, what we have in America is extraordinary. It is unbelievably astonishing. But we have had it so good for so long, it really is so easy for us to find things to complain about when we really should be grateful. This is Phil Farrand, and I have made it home.